Welcome. This is James Corbett of The Corbett Report, coming to you on the 20th of October 2011 here in Japan, the 19th of October in the United States, where I'm joined on the line by Joe Loria, an author, a foreign affairs correspondent, and investigative reporter who's been covering the United Nations for 19 years for numerous newspapers, including the Wall Street Journal, the Boston Globe, the London Daily Telegraph, the Montreal Gazette, the Johannesburg Star, and he is a member of the Sunday Times of London's investigative unit, and he's also the co-author of A Political Odyssey, a look at America's defense industry and the false threat it thrives on. And of course, he was also a previous guest on The Corbett Report. So, Joe Loria, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you for having me back on, James.
All right. Well, I wanted to talk today specifically about an article that you wrote and that appeared on BoilingFrogsPost.com on Monday, the 17th of October, about the alleged Iranian plot turning the UN into a courtroom. And I think this is one of the best analyses I've seen yet so far of this whole Iranian shenanigans that are happening right now. So what can you tell us about, from your inside sources, about what's happening at the UN and the Security Council regarding this Iranian plot?
Well, nothing anymore at the moment, but Susan Rice came with officials from the FBI, the Justice Department, the State Department, and the CIA, and they met individually with all 15 ambassadors of the other 14 ambassadors of the Security Council over the course of 2 days last week. And when it was over, some of the ambassadors made comments, and the allies like Germany, France, Britain, Colombia seemed very, I wouldn't say necessarily convinced, but quite motivated by this or believing what you had to say, whereas the Russians were much more circumspect, and the Chinese said, well, they're still investigating, aren't they? But the Russians did say they'd take it seriously. What Susan Rice and the others showed the other ambassadors is not clear. Beyond the federal FBI complaint, the criminal complaint that has now been made public, was made public on the day this plot was announced, and so we don't know whether these are additional classified information or not. Now, because if they only saw this criminal complaint, I think it would be very hard for anybody to come away with this without huge questions about what this means and what really happened. And there are many experts on Iran, like Gary Sick and former CIA operative in the Middle East, Bob Baer, who went on CNN and said they didn't believe this. They could not believe this. This is not the way Al-Quds, this professional force, operates. They could not never have been involved in this. There's so many things that went wrong and appears to have been done so that it was discovered, so that this would be revealed. For example, the biggest one maybe is wiring more than $10,000 at a time from somewhere out of Iran to a second country into a dummy Justice Department account. $249,000 wire transfers. Even this guy, Mr. Ababsier, who is a Texas Iranian American, failed car salesman, guzzling Jack Daniels, small time narcotics conviction, who was supposedly the big mastermind of this, who approached an American who he thought was a Mexican drug gangster because he knew his aunt. And it turns out the guy happens to be a federal undercover agent for the U.S. Now, he went and approached them and wanted to, I think now it's clear, was involved initially with a drug deal. I think that this was a drug deal all along, and it seems that the agent working for the U.S. suggested it become more than that. And there's a couple of reasons why I say that. The first one being that the guy had some background in drugs, above Sierra, that his neighbor said he thought people going in and out of their house buying drugs, that the cousin that he has back in Iran, who works in Al-Quds, who was some kind of a commander in Al-Quds, this secretive force, elite force in Iran, may have been in possession of interdicted drugs from Afghanistan. Tons of opium come in to be smuggled through Iran, and the Iranian authorities seize this. Like police forces all over the world, they publicly dispose some of it, and maybe other cops, you know, start selling it and make money. So this is not an unusual thing. So if this guy, his cousin, was actually trying to unload some opium, and he knew he had his cousin down there in Texas who could get in touch with the Mexican drug dealers to sell this opium, that's very plausible. So then he approached this guy, or was approached by the federal agent, and they started to make a deal, and on the phone later on after he was arrested above Sierre. He's speaking to Iran, to his cousin, and they're only talking in code about a deal. They're talking about selling a Chevrolet because he was a car dealer, very clever. Never is there any talk that they have on tape that I could see that the guy in Iran knew that what this plot had become was an assassination attempt on the Saudi ambassador in Washington. And as I just was looking again through the criminal complaint, it appears every time they're talking about the assassination attempt, it's in a conversation initiated by the federal agent, and that these might be answers to his statements about that. So although I don't have complete proof, or nobody seems to right now, you could read this, that this was a drug deal that then was suggested by the federal government to become something more, to be able to nab someone back in Iran at the Al-Quds for being involved in this, would be considered maybe an act of war if it went through. And that is very troubling if that's true, because it could be that the cousin in Iran knew nothing about anything other than a drug deal. This is what I'm beginning to see now as I read more into this criminal complaint. And of course, the issue is about the $10,000. This guy, Abab Sierre, this unsophisticated guy, knew, because he says in the complaint that he doesn't want to ship more than $10,000 at a time. And why was $49,000 then shipped? If he knew that, certainly the Al-Quds operatives in Iran know clearly that you cannot ship more than that unless they wanted the alarm bells to go off and for this thing to be discovered. This is what could very likely have been the case. They wanted this to be discovered, and that's why whoever sent that money, whether it be an agent working for a U.S. intelligence agency or the agency of another country, and now we see now that another suspect in this case, Shakouri, is perhaps working, was a member of this anti-Iranian group that's stationed in Iraq, the People's Mujahideen. This is what the Iranians are saying now that they got information from Interpol. We're not going to be able to get to the bottom of this. And the only way you really can is if it goes to trial. And even then, we may not know the truth. But I think if the U.S. government wants to get somebody in a crime like this, they have to follow through and go to a courtroom. And this is one of the main themes of the piece I wrote, is that the Clinton administration in 1999 actually brought the Al-Qaeda operatives in the African embassy bombing trial into a courtroom in the lower Manhattan in the Southern District of New York, where I was there covering that. And I saw the Al-Qaeda guys on witness stand, and they were convicted by a civilian trial, civilian jury. When Bush administration came in, they dispensed with that. They ridiculed this idea and said that terrorism, the crime of terrorism, is purely a national security matter, and they were going to not go to a courtroom, and that if they said somebody was guilty, they were guilty, and they could take military action based on that. This case of the Obama administration seems to be some strange hybrid between the Clinton and the Bush approaches. We have, on the one hand, a criminal complaint, although no grand jury has been impaneled yet for some reason, and then we also have the U.S. going to the U.N. Security Council, going around to capitals around the world, to trying to drum up support for some kind of retaliation against Iran. And as we know, the hawks are calling for war. And if this is a phony plot drummed up by intelligence agencies, whether foreign or domestic, U.S. or foreign, operating in Iran inside the U.S., if it was purely a pretext to try to create war, we have a very serious matter here. That's what some people think it looks like. I'm not sure.
Well, as you point out, this is just such amateur stuff, and it seems like they were almost trying to get the alarm bells ringing the way they were going about the money transfers, etc. And it obviously raises the question of why Al-Quds would be involved in an operation like this when they could clearly be using their own assets instead of going through these shady Mexican drug cartels to try to do an assassination. It just makes no sense. But I don't know if you saw the latest from the London Guardian, but they've just put up an article, Iran links dissident group to Saudi ambassador assassination plot, and it says Tehran has pointed the finger at a dissident group it considers a sworn enemy in an attempt to distance itself from U.S. accusations that the Islamic regime conspired to kill the Saudi ambassador to Washington, and basically talking about this group, People's Mujahideen of Iran, which is
I just mentioned that. That's what they're saying this guy belongs to. And as the New York Times pointed out, if he is a member of that, Shakouri, then that's a great embarrassment to the U.S. That it wasn't the Iranian government that was doing it, but it was the enemies of the Iranian government that did this to make the Iranian government look like they were guilty. But that's a possibility as well. The Iranians may be telling the truth about this. But when they deny it at the highest levels, it's credible without defending the Iranian regime in any way. When they say they weren't involved in this, you have to ask yourself, what would they gain from blowing up a restaurant in Washington, D.C. with the Saudi ambassador and senators, and unless they were looking for a war? And I don't think Iran is looking for a war with the United States right now. It's a war that would be enormously damaging in the region, and they would probably not win in the end. But it would be just nobody would win this war, maybe.
That's right. I mean, it doesn't make sense on its face, but I think it doesn't make sense either for the U.S. to be pushing this so hard when it is such a flimsy case at this moment. I mean, do they really expect anyone is going to be buying it at this time?
Well, they said that they realized it was hard to believe. They've said that in public now, but they said that to the ambassadors of the Security Council. But they offered some kind of proof, and Reuters says that there are classified documents that show these wire transfers linking them back to the commander of the Al-Quds force. I don't know if these are genuine documents, given what happened with the Niger uranium purchase supposedly by Saddam Hussein that George Bush used, among other things, to try to drum up support for the invasion of Iraq in 2003. We would have to question everything in this case if it's so politically charged, and wonder whether any documents are actually not forged, with someone else's name on, sent by other agents from Iran, making it look like that the Al-Quds leader wired this money. And again, they may have just thought it was a drug deal. And they, you know, glammed onto this drug deal and talked this guy into doing an assassination. He started agreeing. And every time he says, yeah, I want to hit the guy, then that's what you see quoted in the criminal complaint, as if he's initiating this. Now, I don't know if that's what happened, but that looks that way to me.
So I'm assuming, and I think you alluded to this in your article, that there's basically zero chance that this would get past the Security Council at this point. But in the long run, I mean, even if they were able to prove something, what are the chances that any sort of action is going to be approved by Russia and China in the Security Council?
Well, again, I think that even if they had these guys red-handed and they had to, you know, they could prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that Ayatollah Khomeini ordered this hit, which, of course, is probably nonsense. I don't know if Russia and China would be so keen on allowing military action against Iran. Saddam Hussein, nobody liked Saddam Hussein, although the French had been close to him at some point. But they were opposed this war, many American allies, in the Security Council in 2003, because they knew the consequences of this war, how damaging they would be to Iraq and maybe the region. That's what happened. And they knew it wouldn't go well, and it didn't. The Americans didn't know that, and I think that if China and Russia would be wise to block this, I think some U.S. allies will have second thoughts about this. But Britain has gone right ahead and congratulated the U.S. for disrupting this terrorist plot before we even know that it's proven to be a terrorist plot, before it goes to court. So if you're going to start the road of a criminal process, then how do you at the same time go to the Security Council and start trying the case there? And in the meantime, the court of public opinion in the U.S., which, of course, you need to go to war, you need public support. You know, these guys are convicted already. Iran is demonized all the time for reasons true and false. And now anything they do, they're lying. Somebody pointed out to me earlier today, Saddam Hussein said he had no more WMD. He destroyed them all. Nobody believed him. It turned out he was telling the truth. Nobody believed him. He gave the dossier over to the UN, and there were no more weapons of mass destruction. So even though Iran probably telling the truth here, or very likely, it doesn't matter. People are finding them going to be guilty, and now we see Joe Biden saying nothing's off the table. It's a very scary thing, but I think there's a lot more wisdom in the country after Iraq, after the phony evidence on Iraq, that it led somebody like Barry Sick and Bob Baer to, you know, to step up and say, this looks, smells very fishy, and it's very dangerous if it's going to be used as a cause to initiate some kind of conflict with Iran. And at the same time, Obama's pressing the UN for intelligence about their weaponization program. So there's definitely some coordinated effort going on to put intense pressure on Iran. And this might be part of it, this plan, when it was revealed. But again, where it goes, I think they have to prove this in court. But maybe I'm being naive here. If you're going to start a court case, have a grand jury indict them, let's have everybody in court. We can get the guys in Iran in here. Maybe we get this guy's story from Texas. I'm not sure the government wants that. I don't know if they could win a case in court. I don't think that's the purpose necessarily of this. The purpose was to use this criminal procedure, it looks like, for political ends to try to push allies to support some action against Iran. Troubling.
Indeed. Well, as you say, it seems like they're trying to play both sides of the fence on this one and probably losing on both counts. Very interesting, but of course a developing story, so we'll have to stay tuned for more as it comes out. But very quickly, I know you don't have a lot of time, but maybe you can just update us on the Palestinian situation that we talked about last time you were on.
Yeah, that is, as we everybody predicted, being dragged out for weeks. President Mahmoud Abbas had said when he arrived back from the UN that he'd only give the Security Council 2 weeks, so that was at least 4 weeks ago now. There is a committee in the Security Council, an admissions committee, that's studying, it's made up of all the members of the 15 members of the Council, whether the application for membership in the UN, whether it's worthy of membership. So right now they're split. I was told by a diplomat last night what's likely going to happen is they will issue a report saying that it's split. And that means there's not going to be a recommendation. But at the same time, the Palestinians could call for a vote whenever they want and for a membership at the Security Council. And right now it still seems like they only have 8 votes and they need 9. I think if they had 9, they'd probably go for it right away. If the fact is they don't have 8 votes, they need 8 and no vetoes out of the 15-member council. Their alternative then is to go to the General Assembly and either to use this Cold War-era Uniting for Peace device to try to override the Security Council, that's going to be a difficult legal argument, or much more successfully, they will be able to get with a two-thirds, with a simple majority, a vote in the General Assembly, rather, to become a observer state. And that gives them many rights to join UN bodies like the International Criminal Court and the International Civil Aviation Organization, etc. And then that would give them a lot more leverage in any negotiations they would have with Israel. But them getting full membership doesn't look likely, but it never did. But they're going through the procedure, and we may find something in the next 2 weeks or so that the Palestinians will have to decide whether to drop the Security Council bid or to go to the General Assembly. And of course, they got the 9 votes the U.S. has vowed to veto. So that was, they would just be pushing the U.S. to publicly veto their membership. And in the meantime, the prisoner exchange in Israel, I think, seems to have been calculated, and I have diplomats thinking the same way that I've talked to, that the timing of that was calculated to elevate and give a great victory to Hamas, while at the same time spitting in the face of Abbas, the Fatah leader, because Hamas now has rejected and did not support the Fatah move to go to the UN for membership. They opposed that. So Israel, being very worried about that move at the UN, they've gone to, once again, a divide and conquer strategy. And many people say that the beginnings of Hamas were helped by the Israelis to help establish it when it was beginning, in order to divide the Palestinians. So here we have this prisoner exchange, and Hamas is looking great, and Abbas is looking sidelined, and he had just come back from this great trip to New York where he made this fantastic speech, and now he's looking like he was just pushed aside, and Hamas is who they want to deal with now. So that's that's another thing we have to take into consideration here. But I just think that we're going to, in the end of the day, the Palestinians will get observer state status at the UN, and it's a big step forward in establishing themselves. They're already a state, as I've written on Sabell's Edmonds site before. I think legally they're already a state, but they're not recognized by Israel and the U.S. They're recognized by 130 countries. Getting observer state status further solidifies that internationally and gives them the right to join these bodies, but it will not give them the full membership that they're looking for.
Yes, exactly. So as we predicted, as you say, the Security Council is stalled, and they're probably going to have to go to the General Assembly at some point. But again, yeah, developing, very interesting story. All right, Joloria, once again, thank you very much for your time today, and I'm looking forward to talking to you again in the future.
Thank you, James. Good to talk to you again.